Blog Talk Radio.
So for those of you who don't know, I mentioned this briefly last week. I got to mention it again today, probably every day this week. There's no show this Friday, and there's no show the Monday directly after that, so next Monday. I have to go to another wedding. This is like the fourth wedding that I've had to go to, or thereabouts, in the past like 3 years or so. I'm at that age, man. Like all my friends, marriage, 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 marriage. One of my cousins also, marriage. And they already know the deal. Every single one involved me traveling somewhere. And for those who know me, that's like, travel. I can't stand travel. But anyway, I will, of course, do it for my wonderful friends. A lot of stuff to get to today. We have some potentially big news about the election that isn't getting much play in the mainstream media. It's third party. What's going to happen with third parties? And we have maybe a breakthrough this election cycle coming in a way that you wouldn't expect. So I actually can't wait to talk about that story. I'm going to kick it off with that story in just a second. We also have public policy polling asked Donald Trump supporters some questions about Hillary Clinton. And man... The results are unbelievable. So everybody knows. I feel like I don't even know why I have to add this caveat every time we talk about it. But everybody knows I don't like Hillary Clinton. Everybody knows why I don't like Hillary Clinton. I run down the list of policy reasons why every single time I mention it. But if there's anything that could get me to defend Hillary Clinton, it's just moron, knuckle-dragging, far-right idiots. And that's likely what I'll be doing today. Donald Trump also responded to the American Muslim who lost his son because his son was a U.S. soldier. So he lost his son in battle. And, oh, man, did he step in it. He may have even gone a little too far this time. You guys know me, man. I've hesitated 800 times before. The rest of the media is like, oh, that's it. These days, Trump is done after this. They do that after every single little hiccup in his campaign. I'm not saying Trump is done after this, no way, because, like I said, yo-yo effect is going to continue moving forward, but this is, man, man, he got everybody against him with this one, everybody. All right, so I'm also wearing my shirt today. I got my new, I hope a lot of you guys got your Secular Talk shirts in the mail. If you didn't get them yet, hold tight. I'm sure they'll be coming soon, but I just got mine, actually, and I'm wearing it on air. You'll be able to see it later if you check out some of the YouTube clips. All right, anyway, let's go ahead and get started here, and we're going to do that with some potentially very, very big news about the election, and this isn't getting much play in the mainstream media, even though it should. We have some potentially huge news here on the election. Apparently, Mitt Romney is considering an endorsement of the Libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson. Now, most of you are like, hold on now, Kyle, don't you mock Mitt Romney every time you mention him and call him the human Ken doll and say he has zero appeal and zero charisma? That is all true. But remember that Gary Johnson is polling at about 9%, 9 in some polls, about 12% in other polls, and he would need to get to 15% in order to get into the debates. And if he gets into the debates, well, then it's, you know, this is a whole new game we're talking about. Because you think back to when Ross Perot ran in the 90s, and Ross Perot, of course, he's a billionaire and he was an independent, but he was massively against free trade deals. He was against NAFTA, and he went in there and he explained what NAFTA would do. This was before NAFTA was implemented, but he would explain, this is what's going to happen. You're going to hear a giant sucking sound from Mexico, and that's going to be the sound of the vacuum taking our jobs over there. I'm Ross Perot. And I mean, he was right. There were a lot of things about Ross Perot I didn't agree with, but he was right about that. And Ross Perot was the most successful independent candidate in U.S. history. Now, it's actually even more interesting for Gary Johnson, because Gary Johnson is going to be on the ballot in all 50 states as the Libertarian. So if he's on the ballot in all 50 states and he gets into the first debate and he does well enough to hold on to then be in the second debate and the third debate and he starts getting much more media attention, well, then you opened up this race. But there's another interesting fact. The Koch brothers have said, we're not considering Trump. It's over. Even though Trump picked Mike Pence for VP, and Mike Pence is somebody who the Kochs have previously given a lot of money to. I mean, that was the whole idea. Trump picks this establishment guy, and he's thinking like, okay, now I'll get the money so I could sell out, you know, more to big money interests. Well, the Kochs just said, no, we're not interested in that. And then they were asked, okay, but will you run, for example, like anti-Hillary ads? They're like, no. Okay, well, then will you maybe fund Hillary? Are you going to back Hillary? They're like, no. So they're not going to focus on that. They do say, hey, we're going to focus on Senate races. But if they decide, and they can, there's nothing stopping them. They call themselves libertarians. So if they decide, Gary Johnson, he's a libertarian. We might not agree with him on everything, but he was the governor of New Mexico. It's not like this guy is a third-party candidate who's a total and utter outsider. He's just not. He's already been involved in politics. You know, there are recent stories about how he said, you know, on TPP, I could be with the establishment on that one, you know what I'm saying? So, and in other ways, Gary Johnson is great and better than Hillary and Trump, and in other ways he's not. But it's possible the Kochs say, fuck it. We're going to pick this guy. We're going to give money to his campaign. And then it's also possible that other high-profile Republicans other than Mitt Romney endorse him. And remember, guys, all that has to happen is enough high-profile people back him to bump him up from 9% or 12% to 15%. If you get him to 15%, he's in the first debate. So that can happen. And then again, all you need is a few big-money donors, and there are many big-money Republican donors who have said, I'm going to sit out this election, or I'm only going to fund Senate races, or some neocons, for example, have even flipped to Hillary because she's sufficiently hawkish for their tastes. So it's possible to have the groundwork and the framework set up to make it so that Gary Johnson makes a dent on this election. And then there's the really far-fetched scenario of, if Gary Johnson gets in the debates and he does well and people are so sick of Trump and Hillary that they're like, okay, I'll go for this guy. He just seems like a regular guy. Well, what can happen is, in the general, if nobody gets to 270 electoral votes, then the House of Representatives has to decide who's going to be president. Now, in that situation, Hillary's out because, remember, she's a Democrat and the House is overwhelmingly Republican. But then the House, many of them in the House are also like, Trump. So then it would honestly be between Gary Johnson and Donald Trump. And they would have to pick one of them. And I don't know who they'd pick. I mean, honestly, my gut reaction would be, nah, they're going to pick Trump. They would pick Trump. But you never know. You never know. I mean, there's so many moneyed interests behind the scenes and elites, wealthy donors, fear Trump because, not only because he's a crazy person, which is true, but also because they don't know if they can control him. Because he really is a loose cannon. And they don't know, okay, here's the money I'm going to give you, now you need to do X for me. No. So they might put immense pressure on the House to pick Gary Johnson in that scenario. Again, this is a very far-fetched scenario, but we're just shooting the shit here. They might lean in Gary Johnson's direction in that scenario, and then next thing you know, there's a President Johnson, and he would be in office with the fewest number of electoral votes in U.S. history. The fewest number of, actually, I should say, well, electoral, but also popular votes in U.S. history. Wow, what a weird election. And then there's another added benefit of that. So if Gary Johnson can get into the debates, get some high-profile endorsements, get some money, get into the debates, well, then also you open up the door to progressives and liberals can go all in for Jill Stein. Because you just made it a three-way race. And in a three-way race between Trump, Johnson, and Hillary, what happens? More likely than not, the right-wing vote is split more so than the left-wing vote is. So when you split the right-wing vote and the left-wing vote is more unified, though obviously not totally unified, more unified than the right-wing vote, well, then that would mean President Hillary Clinton. And that's where I go full, let's fucking get Jill Stein in there. Now, I'm already voting for Jill Stein, as I've said a million times, but I've also added the caveat that, well, I'm doing that because I live in New York. I've said repeatedly, if I lived in Ohio or Florida or anything that could conceivably be a swing state, I would hold my nose and vomit and shit myself and cry myself to sleep for a month and a half, but I would vote for Hillary Clinton because I think Trump is genuinely a danger to the Republic. I think Hillary's business as usual, or if anything, a little further to the right on the spectrum than Obama is. I think Donald Trump is such a wild card that, and I can't trust that guy with nukes, I can't trust that guy with an army, that I would vote for Hillary if I was in a swing state. But if Gary Johnson gets involved in the race, and if Gary Johnson gets to the first debate, and if Gary Johnson gets some funding, and if he's gaining some traction, and if he's polling at 16, 17, 18% in the polls, I'm going balls to the wall for Jill Stein. And in that scenario, I'd say, no, I'd vote for Jill Stein, whether it's swing states, I'd vote for Jill Stein, whether it's solidly red or blue states, I'd just vote for Jill Stein, period. So, but that's just my little thing on it and what I would do. But either way, this is a really, really interesting case that we're presented with here. Because Mitt Romney, I wouldn't put it past Mitt Romney to say, you know what, Gary Johnson. I wouldn't put it past him. And then there's also a question as to whether or not they're pushing Gary Johnson because they want to split the Trump vote and see Hillary win, or if they're pushing Gary Johnson because they really think they could maybe mount enough of a charge where he wins in that far-fetched scenario I laid out. I don't know. But either way, it's fucking fascinating. You already had some members of the Bush family endorse Gary Johnson, not George W. Bush, not George H.W. Bush, but people in the family. So, and remember, George H.W. Bush and W. Bush have not endorsed Trump, and they didn't show up to the convention. So Mitt Romney and some members of the Bush family endorsing Gary Johnson, that would change the dynamics of the race in a way that's unprecedented in U.S. history. And it's really exciting to see how that would unfold, if indeed it does unfold. So let's sit back and watch. It's also possible that nothing happens. Nobody ends up endorsing Gary Johnson. Nobody ends up giving him big money donations. And we're right back to Trump or Hillary. Let's all cry together. So we'll see. We'll see here. But this is absolutely fascinating. Okay, next. Cruising along, bitch. All right, second one. We got a new poll out on Hillary Clinton from a bunch of morons. Polling did some fun questions here on Hillary Clinton and how Trump supporters view her. So according to the results in the recent survey, quote, 74% of Trump voters think Clinton should be in prison to only 12% who disagree. All right. Only 12% of Trump supporters say she shouldn't be in prison. When you talk about people on the left who dislike Hillary Clinton, nobody leads the charge more than I do. Nobody does. So, for example, you know, she voted for the Iraq War. She voted for the Patriot Act. She supported NAFTA. She supported TPP. She supported deregulation. The list goes on and on. She's too hawkish. Obviously supported intervention in Libya, supports intervention in Syria right now. So I despise her. The email scandal. When we covered the email scandal, we showed you exactly what the head of the FBI said, and we showed you what she said, and she lied. But the FBI said, well, it's intent. She's not, like, literally a Russian spy, so we're going to let her off the hook. Now, funny, they didn't care about intent when it came to Chelsea Manning, and they don't care about intent when it comes to Edward Snowden, who's fucking exiled, even though everybody knows he released the information because he cares about the Constitution. So their intent did matter. For Hillary, it matters. So I believe I have the credentials to say nobody's tougher on Hillary Clinton than me in a rational way. But the fact that only 12% of Trump voters say she shouldn't be in jail, even I'm not sure she should be in jail. I mean, yes, I think that she should have been indicted over those emails. And if convicted, there should have been some consequences, for sure. Do I think that's a jail cell? No, because as I said in the case of Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden, too, by the way, even though their cases were different and their intent was obviously pure as opposed to reckless on Hillary's part, I don't think they should be punished. So, okay, you played reckless with, you know, top secret information, classified information as Secretary of State. That's horrific. There should be some consequences. Lock you up in a jail cell? I don't know about that. That might go way too far. Okay, but now some people disagree with me, and they'll say, no, she should be locked up, and that's that. And by the way, do I think there's an argument that, hey, she should be locked up? Not for the email thing, but, you know, everybody who voted for the Iraq war is really a war criminal because of what happened, the subsequent fallout and what happened in that war. So you voted for the Iraq war, and as a result of that, hundreds of thousands of civilians were killed, a worldwide torture regime was set up. You know, it was an offensive war against a country that didn't attack us, which violates international law and the Geneva Conventions and the Nuremberg Tribunal. So there's an argument in that respect that, oh, she should be locked up. But understand, every one of these Republicans who says, oh, yeah, no, it's a totally, she should be locked up, these are all people who vehemently supported Bush. And Bush was bigger in favor of the Iraq war. Bush was the one who orchestrated. Bush and Cheney, they pushed for it. The neocons were totally on board with it. So these are all people who supported the Iraq war saying that she maybe should go to jail for supporting the Iraq war. Now, they didn't say that about the Iraq war because they're referring to other things. Oh, maybe the emails or whatever, she's Benghazi, she'd go to jail for, which, by the way, she's totally innocent on the Benghazi front. 9 investigations say she did nothing wrong. But point is, the arguments they would use to say, well, she should be locked up, they're not good arguments. They're idiotic arguments. Benghazi, lock her up. Email, lock her up. I don't know about that. If anything, you could say war crimes, you know, voting for Patriot Act, which takes away our constitutional rights. There's an argument, but that's not the argument they would make because they supported all those things. Okay, but again, you could say, well, okay, that's – come on now, Kyle. There is an argument she should be locked up, so there's a grain of truth in what they're saying, so why is it a big deal? Well, let's continue here. By a 66-22 margin, they say Clinton is a bigger threat to the United States than Russia. Okay, that's interesting. More. And 33% think Clinton even has ties to Lucifer, to 36% who say they don't think so, and 31% who are unsure either way. Ladies and gentlemen, only 36% of Trump voters say that Hillary Clinton doesn't have ties to Lucifer. Now, when I first read this, I was like, well, come on now. That's not like – it's one of those goofy questions that public policy polling asks. And, I mean, are those people being literal? Doubtful. But then I stopped and I remembered. Hold on. Wasn't it some freakishly high percentage – and I don't remember the percentage to be fair here, but I'm sure if you guys look it up, you could find it like that. Wasn't it some freakishly high percentage of the Republican base, and in this case Trump voters, so almost one and the same, though maybe slightly different, that thought Obama was the Antichrist and still think today that Obama is Kenyan and still think today that Obama is Muslim? Did you know a majority of the Republican base thinks Obama is Muslim today? A majority. So then it hit me. Oh, hold on. No. They're serious. They're being literal. They think that this is a cosmic fight between good and evil, and Trump represents all that is good and holy, and Hillary represents all that is evil, and she's so bad, and she's so terrible, and she's so wrong, and she's so vicious, and she's so immoral, and she's so unethical, that only 36% of them say she doesn't have ties to Lucifer. 31% are like, I don't know, maybe, who knows, I'll leave open the possibility, and 33% say yes, ties to Lucifer. These people are fucking crazy. They're fucking crazy. You know, I said it when we did the breakdown of the DNC speech and the RNC speech. The only thing that gets me to defend Hillary Clinton is these absolute knuckle-dragging far-right clowns who don't know their ass from their elbow and they have a political opinion that they think you should hear. Like, they're not embarrassed by this. They should be embarrassed by this. I mean, the only time I would defend Hillary Clinton is like in the Benghazi hearing where they're pestering her with questions that are not – they're not reasonable questions. The core of what they're insinuating is you wanted those soldiers to die. You did a stand-down order so that they would die. You know, you're working with the bad guys. People say, look, this isn't me. You can see for yourself. People on the far right have said, oh, Huma Abedin, one of her top aides, she happens to be Muslim. They think she's an agent of the Muslim Brotherhood. This is the level of stupidity and blind rage that we're dealing with. I don't like Hillary Clinton. I despise Hillary Clinton. But these people are significantly more loathsome than Hillary Clinton. They're totally disconnected from reality. They're totally dangerous. And take them at their word when they say, no, I think that she has ties to Lucifer. I think Lucifer has given her the marching orders. Maybe it's not conscious. Maybe it is conscious. Who knows? But obviously there's some dark, evil forces that are pushing her. You could just say she has bad decision-making, but no, they can't help themselves. Because for them, it's a black-and-white world. There is no nuance. She never did anything right. So, for example, the Children's Health Insurance Program. I hate Hillary Clinton. That's something I absolutely defend because it was fantastic. So, but no, she didn't do anything right ever. She's evil. Trump is pure and just and great. He did nothing wrong ever. And, yeah, Lucifer, Satan, Beelzebub, demons. I mean, obviously, there are questions there. Again, guys, only 36% say she doesn't have, it isn't tied to Lucifer. I would say, oh, they're just being metaphorical and all that stuff. If they didn't prove in so many other respects that they weren't, they still think Obama's Kenyan, they still think Obama's Muslim, they still think Obama is the Antichrist, some of them, albeit a lower number than the ones who think he's Kenyan and Muslim. But this is a party that has lost their way. As Bill Maher said, going back a year or so, maybe a little longer, you have one party in the United States of America that's great for the pharmaceutical companies, for big business interests, for Wall Street, for the military-industrial complex. That's the Democrats. And you have another party that's full of flat earthers, Civil War reenactors, and religious lunatics. That's Republicans. This here, yet again, proves it. All right, now let me, oh, do I have time for one more? No, let me take my first break now. When we come back, I'll tell you guys what you have to look forward to here. Donald Trump responded to the American Muslim who lost his son fighting for the United States of America, and he made the situation worse. So we'll talk about that, and then we also have NBC's Katie Turr did a great job holding Trump's feet to the fire on the issue of the Geneva Conventions. You don't want to miss that because I have a theory, and it's called the only Trump theory, and I'll explain exactly what that means. And we got much more on top of that as well, including, hopefully we get to it, but Rush Limbaugh had some thoughts on feminism and Hillary Clinton. And I want to go ahead and analyze that. I'm interested, actually very interested, what you guys, the audience, thinks about that. So if it ends up on YouTube, I'll be able to check out your comments. All right, so let's take that break, and we'll come back with all that stuff and much more. Stay right there.
Doggy dog and Dr. Dre is at the go. Ready to make an entrance, go back on up. Cause you know we're about to rip shit up. Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble. Ain't nothing but a G-Bang, baby. Two low death niggas, so we're crazy. Death Row is the label that pays back. Unfadable, so please don't try to face it. But back to the nature at hand. Perfection is perfected, so I'ma let them understand. From a young G perspective. And before me dig out a bitch, I have to find a contraceptive. You never know, she could be earning her man and learning her man. And at the same time, burning her man. Now you know I ain't with this shit, Lieutenant. Ain't no pussy good enough to get burned while I'm offended. And that's real of
something real, deal, holy feel. And now you hookers and hoes know how I feel. Well, if it's good enough to get broke off a proper chunk, I take a small piece of some of that funky stuff. It's like this and like that and like this and up. It's like that and like this and like that and up. It's like this and like that and like this and up. Drake creeps to the mic like a fan. Well, I'm beeping and I'm creeping and I'm creeping. But I damn near got caught, cause my people kept sleeping. Now it's time for me to make my impression felt. So sit back, relax, and strap on your seatbelt. You've never been on a ride like this before. With a producer who can rap and control the maestro. At the same time with the dope rhyme that I kick. You know and I know I pull the most funky shit. So add to my collection, the selection symbolizes. Don't take a toast, but don't choke. If you do, you have no clue of what me and my homie Snoop Dogg came to do. It's like this and like that and like this and it's like that and like this and like that and it's like this. Then who gives a fuck about those? So just chill to the next episode. Gangsta lean, getting funky on the mic like an old Patrick Collard green. It's the capital S-O-S impression, double O-P, D-O-double-G-Y-D-O-double-G, you see. Showing much flex when it's time to wreck a mic. Pimpin' hoes and clockin' a grip like my name was Ola Mike. Yeah, and it don't quit. I think they in the mood for some motherfucking G. Yeah, yeah. So Drake,
what up, dog?
Gotta give them what they want.
What's that, G?
We gotta break them off something. Hell yeah. And it's gotta be something.
City of Compton. Where takes place so we're natural attention. Marvin like a motherfucker, but I ain't lynching. Dropping the funky shit that's making a sucker niggas mumble. When I'm on the mic, it's like a cookie, they all crumble. Try to get close and your ass will get smacked. My motherfucking homie, doggy dog, has got my back. Never let me slip, cause if I slip, then I'm slipping. But if I got my Nina, then you know I'm straight tripping. And I'ma continue to put the rap down, put the Mac down. And if your bitches suck shit, I have to put the smack down. Yeah, and you don't stop. I told you I'm just like a clock when I tick and I suck. But I'm never off, always on till the break of dawn. See you when PTO went and the city they call Long Beach. Put the shit together like my nigga D.O.C. No one can do it better like this. It's like that and like this and like that and it's like this. Then who gives a fuck about those?
So just chill to the next episode.
Trump and the new giant pile of shit he stepped in. This should be an interesting little piece here. Got some clips for you. Let's do it. Donald Trump responded to the American Muslim who lost his son fighting for the United States of America, and naturally, he made the situation much, much worse.
I saw him. He was very emotional and probably looked like a nice guy to me. His wife, if you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She probably, maybe she wasn't allowed to have anything to say, you tell me, but plenty of people have written that. She was extremely quiet and it looked like she had nothing to say. A lot of people have said that.
No, they didn't. This is a classic Donald Trump move. Other people have documented this in a brilliant way, where they show him. He always floats these conspiracy theories and these things that are just flat out not correct. And he gets away with it by pawning off responsibility at the beginning of the sentence. So he goes, many people have pointed out, other people have said that, and then fill in the blank with whatever insane theory it is. And then this way, that makes it so that it's a good rhetorical trick because it makes it so that the journalist is like, wait, Okay, if he didn't say he said it, he's saying other people say it. So it's almost like, I guess, do I blame him for it? Now, obviously, if you're onto the trick, you could just nip it in the bud and say, no, other people aren't saying that. You say it. You just said it. I just heard you say it. So that's what you do. But notice here, Donald, you just proved everybody's criticism of you correct. Because why is he saying that? Like, what does that mean? Oh, you know, maybe his wife wasn't able to speak. I mean, now a lot of people are saying that. Maybe she was in there because she wasn't allowed to speak. You know, many people have pointed that out. So in other words, he's like, yeah, you know how those Muslims are. They don't let the wife speak. They treat them like property. That's the problem right here. So notice what he did. He took something that, keep it real, call it what it is a real problem in fundamentalist Muslim culture where, yes, women are not treated equally. Nobody should deny that fact. Nobody should bury that fact. It's true. It's true. Within fundamentalist Muslim culture, yes, women are not treated good. But he takes that, and then what does he do? He uses it to generalize and extrapolate about an American Muslim family, and one in which their son died fighting and defending the country. Take something bad about fundamentalist Islam, and then just, well, look, I'm just saying, maybe that's exactly what applies to this American Muslim family, where there's no evidence of it, and oh yeah, again, they're parents of this hero kid who died fighting for the country. So blame regular American Muslims for the sins of fundamentalist Muslims, and say any problem in fundamentalist Islam, we're also just going to superimpose and say, I guess American Muslims do this, you know, do the same thing, and they're just as problematic as, you know, the fucking culture in Saudi Arabia. And you know, hey, I'm just saying a lot. I'm not saying it. A lot of people are saying it. Then maybe that's what's happening. God, how loathsome are you, man? You're proving our point. The whole point against you was, look, this guy is a bigot. You want to know why he's a bigot? He generalizes about all Muslims. He assumes, well, they're Muslim. Guilty enough. That's why he came out in favor of, don't take my word for it, go read his statement. It's crystal clear. We need to ban all Muslims from entering the United States of America. A complete and utter or complete and total shutdown, he said, of Muslims entering the United States. Yes, there's no other way to describe that other than bigoted. That's exactly what it is. Because ISIS exists and Al-Qaeda exists, we will now say all Ahmadi Muslims, all Shia Muslims, all Sufi Muslims, all moderate Muslims, we're going to keep all of you out of the country. And oh yeah, by the way, let me smear the character of a family where the son died fighting for the United States of America. Maybe she wasn't allowed to speak. Other people are saying it. Many people have said it. I'm not saying it. They said it. God, you fucking grotesque bigot. What happened in response to this? Well, Khizr Khan came out, and he was asked about this, and here's his rebuttal.
Those two traits of moral compass and empathy are absolutely necessary for the leader of a free world, leader of a nation like United States.
And for all of those viewers out there who are wondering why your wife stood by you silently during the convention.
Her medical condition. She has written an op-ed in her own words, her own voice. Why didn't she speak? I invited her that when you come to this stage, can you say thank you for inviting us? My husband will speak further. She said, you know my condition. When I see my son's picture, I cannot hold myself together. For this candidate for presidency to not be aware of the respect of a gold star mother standing there, and he had to take that shot at her, this is height of ignorance. She is ill. She had high blood pressure. People that know her looked at her face, and she said, I may fall off the stage, and I told her that you have to assemble yourself and stand for the beauty of this tribute that is being paid. this person is totally incapable of empathy.
Dude, her son died. Public speaking on its own is not easy for a lot of people. Add in the fact that your son died, you're talking about your son, the picture of your son is right there, you're talking to millions of people, like he says, maybe she had health issues as well. I mean, just to give you guys an example, when my father passed away, I had to give, I gave the eulogy, and I cried through probably 60 to 70% of it. And this is coming from somebody who's obviously familiar with public speaking. So it's a lot easier for me than it is for a lot of other people. But even with that, because of the gravity of the situation, I'm talking about dead loved one, I cried. In fact, I'm sure there were parts of it where people couldn't even understand what the fuck I was saying. I also cried. I mean, I had to give a best man speech at one of my best friend's weddings. I cried through that too. Like a little bitch. Like a little bitch. So, and again, this is somebody who, I'm familiar with public speaking, so it's somewhat easier for me, and I was like, as I'm trying to talk. And here you have somebody, this poor woman probably has no, she's never done public speaking before, it doesn't come easy to a lot of people, she's scared, she's overflowing with emotions, it was hard enough for him to give the statements that he did. He kind of choked up at a few points. And Donald Trump has the nerve to go out there and say, well, maybe she wasn't allowed to speak because you know how those Muslims are. Did I say it? Other people have said it. It's beyond loathsome. And then, by the way, you know what else happened as a result of this? She went on one of the Sunday shows, forgive me for not remembering which one, and she, like, tried to pull herself together and talk. And he says she also wrote an op-ed, whatever the case is. But she came on one of the shows and spoke about everything. And it's like, dude, don't. Trump just trolled these poor people into coming more into the spotlight. And now she has to talk. She didn't want to talk to begin with, obviously. Now, thankfully, as he said, a lot of good people have, you know, flooded them with support and everything. But, man, what a vile person Trump is. It's true. It's true that he doesn't have empathy. You know, we didn't cover the story. It didn't make the cut for the show. But it's interesting that the person who really wrote The Art of the Deal, the ghostwriter for The Art of the Deal, he's like, yeah, I had to follow Trump around for however long it was, a month or a few months or whatever. And he's like, what I saw was a genuine sociopath, a psychopath, a crazy person. Now, don't get me wrong, guys. This is not me. I like inherent in my criticism here. A lot of people wrongly take away from it. Well, then he's praising Hillary. That's what he's doing. He's praising Hillary. No, I'm not. I despise Hillary too, dude. You know nothing about secular talk. She's horrific. So don't get that impression. This is don't do whataboutery, as people are now calling it. I'm attacking Trump. Yeah, what about Hillary? Yeah, we'll have a conversation about Hillary at some point, and I'll bash the fuck out of her too. But right now we're talking about Trump. And the bottom line is with Trump, I think that stuff is true. I think he is a sociopath. I think he is beyond narcissistic in a way that he cares about himself to the exclusion of everybody else. And he has no self-control and he has no ability to feel empathy or to bite his tongue and use his filter for just a split second in the most obvious situation. They lost their fucking son who fought for the United States of America. And this idiot goes out there and says, well, why didn't she speak? Maybe she didn't speak because she's not allowed to speak. Because, again, you know how those Muslims are. Nobody should deny that there's a problem with fundamentalist Islam and the treatment of women. That's an issue on its own, and we can talk about that, and that's a long conversation to have. But to assume that an American Muslim family that lost their son fighting for this country, that she wasn't speaking, because they're probably just like a lot of Salafi maniacs in Saudi Arabia, that's exactly the kind of bigotry that we said you had from the beginning and you denied, but here, yet again, you prove it. Okay. Now, let's go to the Geneva Convention story. This should be fun. NBC's Katie Turr did a great job holding Trump's feet to the fire on the issue of the Geneva Conventions, which he recently said is, quote, the problem. So let's see if he has some new thoughts on it.
I think everything's out of date. We have a whole new world. When I said that NATO, to Wolf Blitzer, is obsolete, I got attacked.
Would you renegotiate the American interrogation aspect of it?
Katie, I would renegotiate so much of everything. I'm going to renegotiate our trade deals where we're losing with everybody. Katie, I'm going to renegotiate our military deals where we're protecting countries and they're not living up to the bargain. They're not living up to the bargain.
The Geneva Convention and the
I am a person that believes in enhanced interrogation, yes.
So I know it was difficult to hear the question from Katie Turr there, but she said, do you think the Geneva Conventions is out of date? And then she had some follow-up questions and held his feet to the fire on that. And the answer is yes. Yeah. So what, will you, like, renegotiate it? Yes, it's out of date. I'll renegotiate it. But what will you change? You say you're in favor of, like, enhanced interrogation? Yes. I'm in favor of it. So think about what he just advocated for. Now, by the way, side note, because I care deeply about objectivity and being specific, but when he says, I'd like to renegotiate trade deals and I'd like to renegotiate NATO, I actually agree with him on those things. Now, I don't think he should be the one to negotiate it because, again, I think he's a crazy person. But in general, should our trade deals be renegotiated? Yes. Should NATO be renegotiated? Yes. So I agree with that, but that's a different conversation for a different day because the heart of what was going on here was the Katie Turr question and his response. She said, do you think the Geneva Convention is out of date? His response was, renegotiate it. And then again, her specific follow-up was, well, in what sense? You talk about things like enhanced interrogation? He's like, yes. So in other words, change international law to legally allow for torture. That's what he's saying. By the way, in what way is the Geneva Conventions out of date? I'd love to hear an explanation on that. Because the Geneva Convention says shit like, don't kill civilians. Trump's like, out of date. That's out of date. And look, he's explained further at other times on this. He's like, well, what do you mean? ISIS, they get to behead people? They get to kill civilians? And what, we're not allowed to respond? We're not allowed to do that? Okay, they're not allowed to do it. What makes them bad is that they do it. That's what makes them bad. That's what makes them ISIS. So I'm like, yeah, I don't understand. Why don't we change the rules so that we could be like ISIS? Because we don't want to be immoral, asshole, barbaric savages, you monumental idiot. He's like, I don't get it. Why don't we just be more like them? Change the rules. Geneva Conventions. Out of date. It's out of date. I'm going to renegotiate. The fucking Geneva Conventions. That shit like, don't torture, don't kill civilians. He's like, I see problems here. I see problems. We got to change it. Yes. Enhanced interrogation, believe me, tremendous. It's tremendous. We'll be winning with enhanced interrogation, believe me. Sad if you disagree. Sad. He's a child. And remember, guys, the thing is, he's not even smart enough to do, like, the one step. You know how, like, when you play chess, oh, I got to think so many moves in the future? He can't even do, like, the one step into the future analysis. Where, like, even as despicable as, like, George W. Bush was, and the neocons, if you ask them, if you call it torture, do you support torture, they would say no. Because they say, no, it's enhanced interrogation, and, you know, they wouldn't, they would feel the shame when talking about it, like, okay, we know it's wrong, but no. So, but Trump, that's gone. Why? Because at least with the neocons, what did they know? They know that if you say something as stupid as, let's change international law to allow for torture, that you've now opened up that door in a way that previously wasn't open, and the U.S. can no longer say, oh, look, Iran tortured in that instance, this country tortured in that instance, these guys tortured in that instance, that's not okay, you guys got to stop, you're violating human rights. If you change the Geneva Conventions to say torture's A-okay, well, then when people torture, there's no you don't get to say you violated human rights because you just decided it's not a human right to not be tortured. So it's like the neocons were smart enough to know what we're doing is wrong, but we want a separate standard for us. Trump is like, no, I want to open that door and legalize torture worldwide,
And then what could go wrong? I mean, what are you talking about? If ISIS can do it, hey, well, so let me get this straight. They're allowed to behead people and we can't respond? They're allowed to do that? No, they're not. That's the point. That's why they're so bad. That's why they're so evil. That's why they're so wrong. Geneva Convention's out of date. Killing civilians. I mean, it's probably a good idea, right? It's a new thing. We'll get rid of the provision that says don't kill civilians. We'll get rid of the thing that says don't torture. Good idea. Is that a good idea? God, he's so stupid, man. Again, for anybody who thought, like, oh, you know, and it's not an unreasonable take to say Hillary's so bad on so many issues, like trade and corruption, that maybe you go for Trump and you blow up the system and then whatever happens, happens. The thing that should make you slam on the brakes faster than anything are comments like this, because this is a guy who's telling you that he doesn't give a fuck about international law and human rights. At least the other people are smart enough to cover it up as they don't give a fuck about those things. Trump is like, no, I do not give a fuck about those things. I don't care. I don't care about human rights. I don't care about altruism. I don't care about rule of law. Ironically, as he runs as the law and order candidate, he's crystal clear, not international law, not that law. There I can do whatever the fuck I want. And by the way, when he says law and order candidate, he just means cops are always right here at home and don't you goddamn Muslims or Mexicans or blacks act up, because then I'll have the cops crack down on you and they're right by definition. That's what he means by law and order. But this should make people go, oh, overtly fascist rhetoric, because that's what it is. Geneva Conventions is out of date. No, it's not. I don't know. It's out of date. So you're admitting that you're in favor of the worst imaginable things. That's fascist through and through. And as I've said before, imagine a situation in the future. Let's say Trump gets elected, and he does start acting like this. He's like, yeah, no, that's what we do now. We torture. That's what we do. Enhanced interrogation. Torture. And it's cool. It should be renegotiated, the Geneva Conventions. If he starts acting like that, everybody's going to turn around in the U.S. and go, oh, who could have saw this coming? He told you he was going to do it. He fucking told you he was going to do it. So, and that's the thing. Like, even when you look at fucking Mussolini and you look at Hitler, when they rose to power, Hitler did not rise to power by saying, I am going to kill all the Jews. He didn't do it. Because you can't say that, because even for people who are anti-Semitic, they go a little too far. But what they do is, you know, they massage their message, and it's more coded, and then they get in there, and then they become monsters. Trump is telling you up front, I will be a fucking monster. Mussolini didn't rise to power by saying, I can't wait until we get into a war and destroy all of Italy. He didn't rise to power saying that. Trump is telling you, I'm going to be a fascist. I'm going to torture. I think we should change international law to allow for torture. I'm going to, you know, change the Geneva Conventions. It's out of date. Things like don't kill civilians. Fuck it. I want to do shit like that, as he said on Fox and Friends. We have to take out their families. How will history judge us if we pick the guy who says those things and then he does those things? People will look at all of America as backwards, morally cretinous barbarians. That's what they'll do. They'll say, look, we have the fucking comments are on the record in the campaign trail. He said, let's take out their families, let's kill civilians. He said, forget the Geneva Conventions and rule of law. He said these things, and then they picked him anyway. What are we to take away other than America was inherently evil? Do you want history to judge us like that? You shouldn't. Okay. Let me squeeze in one more here before we take our final break. So one of the main reasons many people online are for Donald Trump is because he's allegedly anti-PC. You know, everybody goes, oh, those crazy college campus social justice warriors, as they're called, the PC police. God, they're so uptight and they're so sensitive that we need somebody to go in there and bust up this whole thing. And Donald Trump seems to be the perfect example of that, because he says whatever the fuck comes to his mind, he has no filter. Now, is there a grain of truth in the idea that, well, the PC police and the social justice warriors on the left have gone too far? I argue yes. I'm sure there's some people in my audience who may disagree with me on that, but I think you're dead wrong. Safe spaces are ridiculous. Microaggressions are ridiculous.
the idea of, like, let's censor people on Twitter who don't say things we like. There's a massive gray area there, and there's a big difference between being a dick and genuinely harassing somebody. And oftentimes for the PC police left, they'll say, oh, if you just say something I disagree with, I'm more than happy to just fucking censor you. So I actually agree with the anti-PC people in many respects. But we should also note here that I've given countless examples to prove that the narrative of Trump as this anti-PC crusader is complete and utter bullshit. And today, we have another example. So, terror attacks in Garland, Texas, during the Draw Muhammad contest last year. What did Daddy Trump come out and say? If you pose this question to the anti-PC people and the anti-social justice warrior people, they'll say, well, what do you mean? I mean, any good person would just say, free speech, end of conversation. You're allowed to do that. The real barbarians here are the people who kill over cartoons. And by the way, on this one, they're 100% right when the anti-PC police people say this. So that's what Trump argued, right? See where this is going? He said, quote, nobody would fight harder for free speech than me, but, always funny when there's a but after that, but, why taunt over and over again in order to provoke possible death to audience? Dumb. He continued, the U.S. has enough problems without publicity seekers, hilarious, Trump says that, going out and openly mocking religion in order to provoke attacks and death. Be smart. He also said, what would you do if a large group of Muslims had a very public meeting drawing horrible and mocking cartoons of Jesus? Oh, really? Be cool. Wow, he's swinging a sledgehammer against the people who did the contest. And then Trump also called out the organizers directly. One of them, of course, is Pam Geller, who, by the way, don't get me wrong, is a notorious anti-Muslim bigot. So let me be clear about that. Trump said, went on Fox and Friends and said, it looks like she's actually taunting people. It's disgusting that the shooting happened and everything else. But what are they doing drawing Muhammad? Isn't there something else they can draw? So what happened? I thought Daddy Trump was just a warrior and a crusader on the side of, get over it, you oversensitive bitches. I care about free speech. I care about free expression. I care about constitutional rights. It turns out that's not true at all. It turns out people have conflated how he speaks with what he's saying. So when he goes out there and he's aggressive and confident and arrogant in his tone, people interpret that as, yeah, putting the fucking oversensitive liberals in their place. No, you are an oversensitive conservative. That's what he is. Now, this is why I've labeled him the right-wing PC police, the right-wing social justice warrior. Because, for example, he sued Bill Maher over a joke that he didn't like about him. Bill Maher compared him to an orange-haired orangutan. Because that's the color of his fucking hair. And he said, since Trump always asked Obama, where's your birth certificate? Where's your college records? Where's this? Where's that? Maher flipped it back on him and said, well, you need to prove to me that you're not the love child of your mother and an orangutan. So Trump showed the birth certificate, took it to court, and sued Maher. So you have to give me money now. That's what you have to do. This is a guy who sued The Onion over a satire piece. They admit that they are satire! Hey, we are joking up front. He's like, I don't care. I'm going to sue you because you said something I don't like. You hurt my witty-bitty feelings. Imagine some social justice warriors and some PC police, some college campus kids sued somebody over a joke. All the anti-PC people, Steven Crowder, Milo Yiannopoulos, all of them would be like, oh, my God, little bitches. Look at, oh, my God, they don't understand free speech. They don't understand free expression. They don't understand constitutional rights. That's right, they don't. You know who else doesn't? This dipshit. Donald Trump said, I will, quote, open up the libel laws to sue the media when they do stories he doesn't like. This guy is not against the PC police and social justice warriors. He is a right-wing PC police. PC officer? PC cop? Weird sentence. He's a right-wing social justice warrior. And this is another example right here. Now, by the way, again, we have to be able to be nuanced about this shit. So, true that the people who did the Draw Muhammad contest are right-wingers in the United States, loathsome people who have loathsome political opinions, and they're genuine anti-Muslim bigots. Yes, there's no doubt that Pam Geller is that. Look at her entire record and what she's done. Now, that is true, and what is also true is they shouldn't be fucking shot for mocking religion and drawing Muhammad. That is obvious. So the second a terrorist went in there and started gunning people down, now it no longer matters that they were bigots. Bigots have a right to fucking speak their mind. So you're getting me to defend them and defend them 100% because there was a terror attack against them. You did violence over a cartoon. Get over it. If I draw your Jigglypuff in space, you have no right to do physical violence against me. That's not provocation. That's not asking for it. Nobody's asking for it by drawing dick, okay? But Donald Trump doesn't see it like that. No, Donald Trump sees it as, well, no, don't do that. Why are you pissing people off? Don't, you gotta kowtow to religious fundamentalists. Whatever the religious fundamentalists want, you do what they want, and then everything will be better off. No, except then your freedoms are gone. If you can't say certain things and do certain things because people might kill you simply for expressing a contrary opinion or being a dick, then you have no freedom. You know who's happy with you having no freedom? Donald J. Trump. Spare me your nonsense about how he cares about freedom of expression. He doesn't in any way. All right, I got to take a break. When we come back, Bill Maher and Cornel West went at it on the issue of Bernie or Bust. We're going to talk about that. And RT has a really bone-chilling article about a terror attack in France that I got to share with you guys. All right, stay right there. We'll talk about that and much more.
Later on that day, My homie Dr. Dre came through with a gang to tangle break. And a fat ass Jake of some bubonic chronic that made me choke. Shit, this ain't no joke. I had to back up off of it and sit my cup down. Tangeray and chronic, yeah, I'm fucked up now. But it ain't no stopping. I'm still popping. Dre got some bitches from the city of Compton to serve me. Not for the cherry on top. Cause when I bust my nuts, I'm raising the box of cops. Don't get upset, girl. I just out go. I don't love you, hoes. I'm out the dope. And I'll be
rolling down the street, smoking window, sipping on gin.
Show here. We got interesting back and forth between Cornel West and him. Let's do it. Bill Maher and Cornel West went at it on the issue of Bernie or Bust on Real Time last Friday. Let's check it out.
There's only two items on the menu.
Well, we got three. We got Jill's
Stein.
Hold up a sec.
We got four.
We got four.
We got Gary.
The third one, okay.
We only got two people who have any chance
of becoming
at
president.
At the moment, it looks that way, but
it
Bernie thought it was 3% too.
Yeah,
you
but
know,
it's August,
too.
So you think Jill Stein is going to be president? Look me in the eye and tell me that.
We shall see. But it's going to be tough.
No.
It's going to be tough.
But part of it is this, though, brother. You got to draw a line in the sand. When I raised the question
right.
about David Duke and Donald Trump, in your own mind, you had to draw a line in the sand. I draw a line in the sand.
It's a dumb analogy.
It's not dumb at all. Because all that just shows, under certain conditions, you wouldn't make a choice between two folks that you refuse to.
Let me, as long as we're doing analogies, let me give you an analogy.
Okay, let's work with
you. You're on a train station.
Yeah.
Right here in L.A. You want to go to San Francisco. There's a wedding up there. You got to get there. There's one train that's going to San Francisco, but it's a little slower than the one you want. There's one other train leaving, but it's not going to San Francisco. It's going to hell. It's going to San Diego, which is a lovely city, but it's not where you want to go. You want to go to San Francisco. The only other train is going in the opposite direction. You get on the train that's going in the direction you want to go, but slower, or do you go to San Diego?
Well, let me answer the question. Can I just answer the question? I love this analogy, though, but let's look at it this way. Back to Brother Matt's point. The Clinton train, Wall Street, security,
okay.
Surveillance, militaristic, not going in the same direction I'm going. It's just better than the neo-fascists like Trump. That's all.
Okay. So this little back and forth was pretty big on social media. And who's right? I mean, let's cut right to the chase here. They're actually both right. So I know that seems like it's, that's not possible. What do you mean? That's, you know, they're taking exact opposite positions. But no, hear me out here. So the thing that Bill Maher needs to understand is your argument sucks. Maybe that was a little harsh. But it, no, it's true. That's a shitty argument. So his point is, oh, you're here in L.A. and you got to get to a wedding in San Francisco. You either hop on a train that goes to San Francisco and goes slower than you want to get there, or you hop on a train that goes to San Diego, which is just actively going in the wrong direction. Now, that's not an apt way of viewing the situation. Here's a better way. Let's stick with this train analogy. So you get on the train here in L.A. To go to the wedding in San Francisco, and Hillary Clinton is a train that you get in it, and then it doesn't move, and you just sit there. You sit in the station for 8 hours, and then you get out, and you're like, what the fuck just happened? I just sat in a train, and we didn't go anywhere. I just wasted my time. Now, Donald Trump, yes, you get in the train, you go in the wrong direction, and you end up going to San Diego. That makes more sense for this election. Either you go with Hillary Clinton, and at best, it's no change, and it's a continuation of Obama's policies. At worst, it's actually a little further right on the spectrum than Obama. So I was actually being a little fair with my train point there, because it could be that you get in the train to go to San Francisco and you go 15 minutes in the wrong direction. You go 15 minutes south, and then they just kick you off. So it's one or the other. That's the reality of the situation for Hillary Clinton. And also, Cornel West went on to make a point at a different time about, if I told you, you have to pick between David Duke and Donald Trump, who would you pick? And Maher didn't really have a good answer to that. And Cornel West's point was, I'm illustrating how there are, at some time, you will draw a moral red line and say, I refuse to pick between the lesser of two evils. So that was another one of Cornel's points that Bill Maher kind of struggled with. So that's where Maher is wrong. He's basically making it seem like Hillary is much better than she actually is by even assuming that her train gets to San Francisco. It doesn't get to San Francisco. It doesn't even start going in the right direction. At best, it sits in the station. At worst, it goes 15 minutes in the wrong direction. But I will grant him that, yes, Trump's train does, in his example, go all the way to San Diego, go in the wrong direction. So that's where Maher is wrong. Where is Cornel West wrong? Well, he's wrong in assuming it's possible for Jill Stein to get elected. It's just not. It's just not going to happen. There's absolutely, positively no way. She's not even on the ballot in all 50 states. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So it's disingenuous to portray it as if that is the case. So Maher is right when he actually says, no, when push comes to shove, it's two things on the menu. It's either Donald Trump will be president or Hillary Clinton will be president. That it just is what it is. The only possible scenario outside of that is, like we just described, the Koch brothers decide to back Gary Johnson. Mitt Romney and a bunch of other high-profile Republicans endorse Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson gets over 15% in the polls, gets in the debates, busts shit up, and then in the general election, nobody gets to 270 electoral votes. And then the House of Representatives picks who's going to be president, and then they somehow magically pick Gary Johnson. There's a lot of ifs in that one. But 99.999%, it's going to be Trump or Hillary. So I think Cornel West would be better to just admit that, because it is true. So that's why I think there's a grain of truth in what both of them are saying. Maher is right that at the end of the day, it's one or the other. So when liberals don't answer the question, who do you think is the lesser of two evils, you're just dodging reality in that sense. Like, you could not answer that, or you could pivot and say, I'm not going to vote, or I pick Jill Stein, or I'm for Gary Johnson, or whatever. But when you're asked directly the question, who's the lesser of two evils, Trump or Hillary, to not answer that means you're just not answering that. It means you're not acknowledging reality that one of them will be president. So Maher is right in that respect, but Cornel West is right in that ever since Bernie went down, there's now this rigid insistence from people on the left that you're not allowed anymore to talk about the sins of Hillary Clinton. That's where Maher is wrong and Cornel West is 100% right. So just because it's the general election now doesn't mean that Hillary didn't support the Iraq War. doesn't mean that Hillary didn't support intervention in Libya and lead intervention in Libya. Doesn't mean that she's not for intervention in Syria. Doesn't mean that she didn't vote for the Patriot Act. Doesn't mean that she wasn't for deregulation, which led to the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. Doesn't mean that she wasn't for NAFTA. Doesn't mean that she's not massively corrupt and bought by Wall Street. But now I feel like people like Marr, who know these things, he knows this. Now all of a sudden it's like you're not allowed to talk about that because it's the general election and we got to defeat Trump. No, your job as somebody who's a comedian and as somebody who's a political commentator, you got to be honest no matter what. I don't begrudge Hillary for not bringing up all the shitty things she did necessarily. And her job, I think she does best when she just focuses on how bad Trump is. But your job, Bill Maher, you got to be honest about it, man. You can't all of a sudden pretend like now that it's a general election, Hillary's train is going to San Francisco just slower than Bernie's train. Hillary's train gets nowhere near San Francisco. And you fucking know that. You know that that thing just sits in the fucking station and doesn't get you to where you want to go. You know it's centrist at best, center-right at worst. You know it's corporatist. You know it's sellout. So what I want to see from people who are in Bill Maher's camp, which I partly agree with, that yes, Hillary is not as bad as Trump. You got to be honest about it. You got to be honest about it. You can't pretend that she's good now that she's against Trump. You got to say she's horrific too, she sucks too, but now let me tell you why Trump is worse. That's a fair argument. You're not really making that argument. You're like covering up all the bad shit about her. And what Cornel West has to admit, he's right on all the facts about Hillary's policies, but he's wrong in dodging the reality that it's going to be Trump or Hillary that ends up winning. So I honestly think there's truth in what both of them are saying, and that'll likely piss off a lot of people in my audience. So I'm already cringing at the potential like-to-dislike rate in this video on YouTube. But who knows? Maybe you guys will surprise me and it won't be that bad. No, it'll probably be that bad. Okay. All right, now we go to a terror attack in France. RT has a really bone-chilling article about a recent terror attack that happened in France last week. And let me just say here real quick. These are now happening so often that I follow the news for a living. Like, I have to be on top of it. I have missed some because of how often the terrorist attacks happen, that like now it occupies one news cycle and then it's gone. Whereas it used to be the case that if there's a terror attack, oh my God, you talk about it for a week. Now they're happening so frequently that it's like, okay, here's one. Oh, this one was actually relatively small in nature because very few people died. So, hey, it's like a blip on the radar screen, which is a crazy thing because you never want to become so accustomed to it that it's just like, oh, man, this is what it is. It's called Tuesday. No, that's not good. So they explain here in the article, two nuns who were taken hostage by two jihadists in a Normandy church on Tuesday gave accounts of their ordeals. They said one of the attackers smiled happily after slitting Father Jacques Hamel's throat, and a bizarre theological dispute followed the crime. One sister said both attackers were obviously nervous and aggressive. But killing Father Jacques seemed to please one of them. Two attackers were 19 years old. They eventually were killed. They tried to get away, but they were shot by police at a certain point. If I'm not mistaken, they tried to use the nuns as shields. And then they had, I guess they had sniper fire on them, and they were obviously afraid that they were going to kill the nuns, so they ended up taking them out. Let me give you the exact quote from one of the nuns here. This is bone-chilling. I got a smile from the second man. Not a smile of triumph, but a soft smile. That of someone who is happy. The men then had a conversation about religion with their female hostages. One asked Sister Helene if she was familiar with the Quran. Quote, yes, I respect it like I respect the Bible. I've read several surahs. and those that hit me in particular are the sirs about peace, she responded. Remember, this is right after they slit the throat and killed the priest. One of the attackers replied, peace, it's what we want. When you talk to the television, tell the authorities that as long as there are bombs on Syria, we will continue our attacks, and they will happen every day. When you stop, we will stop. Later, one of the attackers tried to convince them that Jesus could not be both a man and a god. And then you had the nuns basically downplay the situation and say, okay, maybe you're right, because obviously they didn't want to get killed. But what a bizarre scenario we have here. So, this case is very indicative of profile of many of these jihadist terrorists against the West. You have what is likely a mix of many different factors going into play here. You have somebody who, it's possible, though not necessary, but it's possible that there's some genuine psychological imbalance, some deep-seated mental illness. They're psychopaths, they're sociopaths. Again, that's possible, though not required, not necessary to do something like this. And then the real, you know, story here and the real motive can be found in the last part that I just read to you. So, first of all, the fact that they're getting into a theological dispute, and basically one of the attackers is trying to convince them that, no, Muhammad is the prophet, and Allah is God, even though that means God is God, but the Quran is the holiest, and Jesus cannot be God because he can't be a man and a god. So it's almost like he's trying to, you know, stake out his religious position and justify to the nuns, who are also religious people, but he's trying to explain to them, no, we're right, our religion is right, we're the one true religion. And he's so convinced of that, and they're so convinced of that, that they're willing to kill for that. So on the one hand, you have deep, deep brainwashing, fundamentalist Islamic brainwashing. But then on the other hand, you have, they're admitting it right here, and they're telling you, when you talk to the television, tell the authorities that as long as there are bombs on Syria, we will continue our attacks, and they will happen every day. When you stop, we will stop. Now, that's not to blame the West and say, oh, it's the West's fault, and that's not to say that it justifies the actions. Obviously, it doesn't justify the actions. That fucking priest wasn't dropping bombs over Syria. So their argument, when it comes down to it, makes no sense. He's not attacking Syria. But understand that this is part of what goes on in the minds of jihadists and terrorists who strike against the West specifically. So when you have Salafi jihadists and you have Wahhabi Muslims in Saudi Arabia, for example, who treat women like shit, they want to kill gays. That's got nothing to do with the West. That's got nothing to do with U.S. imperialism. That's the ideology run amok and fundamentalists who really believe their religion. That's one problem. Then there is another problem where oftentimes the attacks that are directed against the West, yes, some of that has to do with politics and geopolitics and revenge and retribution. Oftentimes it's, oh my God, you killed a family member of mine with a drone. Now I'm going to go join the people who are fighting back against you because fuck you. You just took away the only thing in my life that I really cared about, my family or my friends. So this story is really a Rorschach test for the different sides of this debate. Because some people, most of the time progressives, like to only focus on terrorism being a response to Western imperialism and the actions of the West. Well, there's enough evidence of that in this story that they could just harp away on that angle of it. But then obviously the other group of people likes to argue, no, if you say it has anything to do with the West at all and imperialism, you're an apologist for terrorism, and it only has to do with Islam, and it only has to do with fundamentalism and extremism, and everything else is just distracting from that core issue. Well, guys, here we have a case where it is clear that it was a mix of factors. And if you can't admit that it is a mix of factors, then you're a silly person playing for a team, and you only care about your precious narrative, whether that narrative is always at all costs just blame the religion, or that narrative is always at all costs blame the West and say it's foreign policy. No, here we have both things, and it is crystal clear. If you have somebody who's arguing with nuns about theology and trying to convince them, no, Jesus can't be God, Muhammad's the prophet, and Islam is correct, and that's it, that's it, no, that's what it is. I'm so convinced I'm right, I was born into the special religion, and I believe it to my core. Well, he's telling you, yes, I'm doing this partly because of my religion, and because I'm brainwashed by it, and because I believe it, and I'm a fundamentalist. So that aspect is in the story. The aspect is also in the story of, this has to do with fucking Syria. Stop dropping bombs on Muslims, and I'll stop fucking attacking you. Both things are true, and both things can be true. And when the evidence points in that direction and you have a mix of factors, if you're in one of the groups that only harps away on the religion angle or you only harp away on the U.S. imperialism foreign policy angle, you're so blinded by your narrative that you can't see the obvious evidence presented to you, and you can't admit when the other side is half right. Here's a story where both sides are half right. And like I said, there may even be the third aspect, though I don't know for sure, of they're also just mentally ill and crazy. So, but that's what we're seeing here. And as a final note here, let me be clear about something. I'm not saying every act of terrorism, a mix of these different factors. I'm sure many of them are. But yeah, there are some that are purely retribution and revenge against the West, you know. And there are some that are purely driven by rational real-world grievances. That doesn't justify it. That explains it. There are some attacks that are of that nature. There are also attacks that are just from out-and-out Kool-Aid drinking, brainwashed, I believe every word of my religion, morons. That's also a thing. And then again, some are a mix. So there's a spectrum. This is one on the spectrum where there's truth in both camps, and it would be nice if everybody admits that. But either way, the main takeaway here is this is a grotesque cancer on the planet. And smart people need to come together and find a way to defeat what's happening here in the realm of ideas and practically in the real world. Okay. More. I got to squeeze in one or two more before we're done today. We have an incredible story here that highlights just how absurd the war on drugs has become. Think Progress reports, Orlando police pulled over a man and arrested him for drug possession, but it turns out that drug was a Krispy Kreme donut. After being pulled over for failing to come to a full stop before driving out of a parking lot, a very serious crime, 64-year-old Daniel Rushing told the Orlando Sentinel he was arrested, jailed, and strip-searched all over a few flakes of sugar in his car. Police thought the flakes were crystal meth. Two roadside drug tests came back positive for meth. Rushing ended up spending 10 hours in jail and was released on a $2,500 bond. Prosecutors later dropped the case against him after another test determined that the flakes were not an illegal drug. All right, so this is very important, and this highlights a few issues. Those drug tests that they use, they have an immensely high fail rate. It's not foolproof. It's this thing where, you know, you got the water, and then you, if it turns blue or if the cotton swab or whatever turns blue, oh, see, this is a drug. That's actually not the case. So many things trigger a false positive in there. Even some standard cleaning materials do. So if you spray Febreze in your car, and let's say it gets on your, the rug or the carpet in your car, and then they come up there and they do a test on it, and they think, hey, we think they sprinkled cocaine on the backseat of the car, and then they do the test, well, it'll come back blue, and that's not because there's fucking cocaine there, it's because you used a cleaning product there. I mean, it's amazing that people, we still use these things as if it's like, oh, we got them, see, it came back as a positive drug test. I forget the exact number, like 30% or something of those are false positives. And by the way, a lot of times they use that, and then it doesn't even get to court, and people plead down, do a plea deal. And they're like, oh, it's a positive drug test. And the person knows they didn't have drugs, but they think that's a scientific test that they're not going to be able to prove wrong. So they're like, okay, I'll do a deal. I'll do a plea deal. How many innocent people were punished as a result of this shitty test? The test should be eliminated, man. This isn't good enough. They have more accurate tests that they can do in the lab. Now, in this case, the guy was like, I'm not going to fucking sit here and take a plea deal or anything. I know I didn't do anything wrong. You guys fucked up somewhere. So credit to this person for that. But then what happened? Went to the lab, came back. It wasn't a drug. Look at what they put this poor guy through, all because there were some fucking, there was some sugar, a little bit of a glazed donut on the ground that they thought was crystal meth. So those tests need to be eliminated. That's point number one. Point number two is, the, to be clear, those tests they use on the street, obviously not the scientific ones that work that they use in the lab, which probably take longer to do, by the way. But we got to end the drug war. We got to end this. This is crazy. Now, oftentimes, I watch the show Cops. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. And I call that the biggest 50-50 show on planet Earth, because half the time when they're stopping people who are doing assaults and they're, you know, they're committing serious crimes, they're heroes. The cops are heroes in that respect. You got to keep it real. They're heroes in that respect. If you're stopping somebody who's committing an assault or, you know, doing some giant robbery or whatever, these guys are heroes. But then the other 50% of the time, it's just cops harassing people for drugs. I watch that one and I feel horrible for these poor victims, and that's what they are, victims who are living in a fucking police state in an occupation where the cops honestly search them for any reason and all reasons. You could tell that constitutional rights are violated in the show. It's amazing that these people don't sue, and they would win those suits because they have a right to be protected from unreasonable search and seizure, but oftentimes the cops start searching and they pretend like it's plain sight search, and it's not. So, but you have to end the drug war because you're just locking up people who aren't actually criminals. It's like locking somebody up who drinks a Corona or has some Jack Daniels or pops a Xanax at night or drinks a Monster Energy in the morning before work. These are all drugs. They change your consciousness. But we draw the line at some drugs and say, well, no, that one we're going to lock you up in a cage if you use it. Why? I don't know. It has stronger effects. So what? So what? So you take a big upper or a big downer. Whoop-de-frickin'-do. Should you be locked up for years over that? Should you be harassed by people in a uniform? I'm supposed to take it seriously just because they're wearing uniforms? Oh, they must be doing something right. They have uniforms. Fuck that. Free every nonviolent drug offender today and end the war on drugs. Legalize, tax, and regulate. We can't keep having stories like this, man. And by the way, this is just an outlier that's particularly insane and egregious. But even if it was fucking crack cocaine or cocaine or crystal meth or whatever, that person has a medical issue if they're addicted. They should get help. They shouldn't be locked up in a cage. This isn't the time to be punitive. And honestly, most of the time when people do drugs, they're totally normal people who can use in moderation. 80% of people, according to Dr. Carl Hart, who's an expert on addiction. So we got to stop with this drug war, man. It's insane. And this is another example of it right here. Okay. All right, let me do one more story here. Actually, do I have time? No, okay, I don't have time. I got the countdown in my ear. Tomorrow I got a lot of stuff to still get to. I got four stories I didn't get to today. But anyway, love y'all. Thanks for listening, as always. We'll be back tomorrow with another tremendous show for you, to steal Donald Trump's word yet again. Everybody have a great rest of the day. Peace.